From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Hope everybody is maintaining through all of the what's going on out there. And you're supposed to stay indoors because it's smoky outdoors, and you're supposed to go outdoors and get some fresh air because of COVID. So you pick your poison. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to welcome in Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and the Department of Evangelization and Catechesis. Kevin, Deacon Kevin Stasko, welcome. Deacon, are you with us?
I'm sorry, I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
Sorry about that.
That's right. I like it when you're watching the shows on TV and they have a remote guest and there's like a 3-second delay. and then they talk all over each other. Well, welcome, yeah. As usual. Good to have you with us. How has this, all of this, I mean, the last time we talked, we were talking about COVID and how that is affecting your ministry and your the varied ministries. And now we're talking about smoke and COVID, and some people are talking about the end of the world, I think.
Yeah, the earthquake is next, right?
Yeah, that's right. Locust,
I
think.
With another hurricane coming down on New Orleans, I just can't. You know, it's crazy. And then this whole, they say the air quality is going to get better in October. I read that today.
Wow.
A long time.
October of 2020, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. That's my hope, right? It's all our sincere hope that it will be better then.
I know it's as if it's
not bad enough that we're isolated at home. Now we can't go walking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's difficult. I think it's difficult times, and it's hard. I was just on a call today with the Faith Formation Advisory Board of the Diocese of Sacramento, we have representatives who are faith formation leaders in all of the different deaneries. And we were just talking about a lot of things. I mean, I think we've moved from worry and concern to still being worried and concerned, but it's time to start faith formation programs. So let's get going on starting those programs. And how do we practically do that, given the realities? And I think part of that is just being understanding and merciful and just meeting people where they're at and trying to work out what we can. Some people are going to be able to teach their kids at home and do a good job with faith formation. Other people are going to need help. And how do we offer the best assistance we can, both at the diocesan level and the parish level?
It's a big challenge, and in so many cases, you're having to pivot very quickly.
Yeah, I think that's probably the hardest part, right? Some people are good in a crisis, and some people aren't, right? Some people like the time to plan. Other people do best when they have to change now, right? So we're trying to help the people that we're trying to help all the, everybody kind of make that pivot. And part of that is just realizing that this is the reality and not, some people thought, well, we'll just stop doing anything until the virus goes away, and then we can start doing sacramental preparation. But, I mean, we have to prepare people for sacraments. It's an essential thing that we do as parishes and as a diocese. So it's not an option to say, okay, we just won't do anything until January, won't do anything until 2020, until 2020, the school year's over, and we'll try again next year. We have to do something. So that's the issue of trying to get them empowered to do something. And then also offer them training and formation to do that. So we try to offer some trainings that we have, and we have ministry days coming up. And for ministry days this year, we're offering a bunch of different workshops. We've tried to make the workshops more practical to the reality right now, so that people will be able to take what they've learned in ministry days and apply it to their, whether they're teaching their own kids the faith at home, or whether they're a catechist trying to do an online Zoom class, whether they're a religious educator trying to figure out, well, how do I support the families who are doing all this formation at home since we're not doing it here in the building anymore? Even though in some counties we can have indoor, mm-hmm. All the schools, the Catholic school, most of the Catholic schools have reopened for in-person classes, and the faith formation programs can do the same thing. It's just that sometimes we don't have on the faith formation side, sometimes the parishes don't have the staff or the volunteers to do all the sanitation and follow all the guidelines to have those in-person classes inside the building. So, you know, a lot of people are going to be turning to virtual and kind of a hybrid model. Like I said, we have tons of workshops and ministry days that will try to help them through that.
Yeah, and talk a little bit more about ministry days, those who might not be familiar, and obviously it's going to be virtual this year, but it's actually a bonus ministry days because you can ultimately, over time, view all of the workshops.
Yeah, so in the past you could only get, you know, a keynote and three workshops, and now you can get a keynote and three workshops live that day. Online, it's online, but it's a live class. Those are live classes. And then you can view all the other workshops for the same admission fee for the next 2 months. So each ministry days originally was just for catechists, then it was really open to all ministries, all volunteer ministries in the parish. And so our big ministry day, the big ministry day is on Saturday, the 26th of, Saturday the 26th. What is it, 26th? That was right. The 26th. Saturday the 26th of September. And it starts out with a prayer service with Bishop Soto, and then we have a keynote talk in English and another keynote in Spanish during the day. And we also have workshops. And so there's 20, I think there's 24 workshops in English and 21 workshops in Spanish. And those are offered at various times during the day via Zoom meeting. And so you can attend those meetings, and we're also having a virtual exhibitors fair during the lunchtime. There'll be some networking sessions with different ministries. There'll be different exhibitors that'll be there, and you can go into the room and talk to them about their products or ask them questions. A lot of our religious education coordinators are trying to figure out, how do we take this textbook that we usually use in the classroom, and how do we send that home and get parents using it? A lot of the publishers have online versions of their textbooks now, and convenient ways to track the progress that people track the progress of people going through different curriculums online. And so there's an opportunity for them to connect with those publishers, also to connect with a lot of people who are producing materials that can be brought home to do faith formation in the home.
Tell us about the keynoters, too. Are they disappointed they're not getting to come to California?
I think they probably are. They usually are. California is a popular place to come for workshops. But our workshop, our keynote speaker in English is Dr. Edward Shree. Mm-hmm. And he is going to be talking on vibrant faith in the secular age, today's challenges for parents, families, and parish leaders. So why is it important to teach the faith in our culture today? How can we do that effectively? How can we support our families in this? It's not just a nice thing to learn our Catholic faith. It's like understanding these Catholic principles about our moral teachings and our understanding of human life, sex, and marriage are so important to being able to navigate the culture as a Christian. And so he's going to be talking about that and the importance of that, hopefully empowering and getting people excited about, how we can support the families in a really intentional way and how important that is. We have Professor Felix Balazzi from Boston College, mm-hmm. who will also be there in Spanish, delivering a similar message to the Spanish-speaking community. But the idea here is that, we focused on just forming the children at the parish for so long. Sometimes I think we forget that, these children are part of families, and if these families aren't really living out their faith day to day, if they don't understand the concepts of our faith and how to pass them on, then, it's hard for children to follow through with living the life of faith that they've been taught in our faith formation programs. So again, the whole ministry days is designed to give practical information to people on how to on how to form families, form parishes, form families and parents at home, in a way of, educating our parents, educating the children, more through the families or in combination with the families, rather than educating the children separately from their parents and families.
Yeah, if you don't pass the faith on successfully to your own kids, the chances they, when they are adults, are going to pass it on to their kids get very slim. And
I think also we underestimate the power of children will always imitate you.
Yep.
They will rarely listen to you.
Now, that's so, right. You may think they're paying no attention to you at all, but they're modeling you.
Yeah, so I think that's the issue too. Is really the key to forming the faith of our children is getting parents and grandparents to live out the faith in their lives. And that example kind of rubs off on the kids. I mean, I think even that big study they did, the National Study on Youth and Religion, what is it, like, I think it's 10, 15 years ago already, and then they followed them into young adulthood. And what they found with all of those teens is that, the faith that they had was basically the faith they saw modeled. You know what I mean? If their parents were just kind of lukewarm Catholics, they were lukewarm Catholics. If their parents were hardcore Catholics, they were hardcore Catholics. They weren't rebelling against their faith. They were just, adopting the faith that their parents had. And if their parents' faith was really weak, their faith was pretty weak. If their understanding, a parent's understanding of the faith was weak, their understanding of the faith was weak. So unlike, I think, previous generations that might have rebelled against their parents' religious beliefs, the millennial generation, and I think and Generation Y, they're kind of accepting and accepting that modeling that they're receiving. So the best thing a parent can do to pass the faith on to their kids is to practice the faith and study the faith themselves. Ministry Days is an opportunity for them to do that. It's open to parish volunteers in different ministries, but it's also open to everyone. And you can register for Ministry Days at ministrydays.com and also find out the information on all the different workshops. I noticed on here that there's a workshop called Be the Change You Wish to See in Your Home.
Hmm.
And I love that idea that, sometimes we think, it's just not working. Faith, I tried a bunch of things, it's not working. And then you realize, wow, I need to start with just modeling and practicing the faith myself. That's the beginning of it.
Yeah, and it's more than just, every Sunday we're going to Mass, whether you like it or not. It really is explaining as we go, explaining the sacraments, explaining all our practices, explaining the holy days, explaining about the saints, explaining, but really I think the real key is beyond the sacraments, of course, is just how we're supposed to be living our lives in this world, and boy, if it's just a matter of 8 o'clock Sunday morning, we're going to Mass and then we leave at 9 and that's the end of it, you're going to lose them.
Yeah, no, I think it really is true that, it's just like when you're talking about, sex education or theology of the body, right? They say, when are you going to have the talk with your child, right? Everyone knows that if you really want to pass on the good image of love, sex, and marriage and the Catholic views of sexuality, it's not one talk, it's 1,000 talks.
That's right.
And the first 500 of those are probably super awkward for both the parent and the child. And I think in our culture, it's the same thing with our faith, right? It's having those little conversations about, the kid's favorite song on the radio is, really immoral, right? How do you start to have that conversation with them? What is the song really saying? What does that say about you as a person that this is your favorite song?
And, yep.
You know what I mean? What would what would Jesus do in this situation? Or how does the church, how would the church see it? Like, having those little conversations with them over and over and again, if you don't believe it and you're not living it out yourself, it's pretty hard to have those conversations. So I think that's the issue, is starting with yourself and daring to have those conversations about morality, about Christ's teaching, about the sacraments, about the miracles that happen every day in our lives, about the power of prayer. Like, are we having those conversations with our teens? Or are we just kind of letting it go because that would be awkward, or, you know, I don't know how to start up the conversation, right? Part of this is just empowerment of people, you know, really, you know, one, getting them to trust and trust their gut and what they believe. And the second thing is getting them to do some formation or some, you know, learning themselves so they know what to say and how to pass that on. I think so many people feel, go ahead.
No, I think it's really important that it's not the hard and fast rules. We're doing it this way because I said it, and you're going to believe this because I told you to believe it. You know, you have to really give them something to where they do. They take it in. They take it into their heart. They take it into their soul. They take it into their brains, but especially their heart and soul, that this is true. You know, and it doesn't. It's not just because Dad told me it or Mom told me it. I can tell Mom and Dad believe it and are living it. And yeah, go ahead and challenge me. I mean, in a good way. Go ahead and ask me, why do I believe this? And I think when you hit it right on the head, Christ's teachings, there's just nothing in in Christ's teachings. Some of them might be a little bit hard, you know, like give somebody the shirt off your back. They aren't difficult to understand, and they're really hard to challenge.
Yeah. Well, I think for some people, they're really hard to live out, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
That's the issue, too, is that, it is hard. But again, I think that the message, you know, that I hope we're sending to our kids is that, you know, we're always practicing Catholics, right? We're practicing Catholics because we never get it 100%
right. That's
right. Right? We're not expected to. You're just I'm just a mere practicing Catholic. I keep practicing. I keep trying to get it right. I don't always get it right. I make mistakes. I have to ask for forgiveness. I think, you know, yesterday's, the gospel yesterday about forgiveness is, or this last Sunday about forgiveness, I think was really powerful, right? Because it was saying, you know, hey, you've got to forgive, and you got to forgive more, and that's what we're called to do. We're called to forgive, right? So how do you teach that teaching to your kids? I mean, I guess you could keep yelling at them about forgiving, but, you know, I think the best way to teach it is that they see you as a forgiving person, someone who's not holding grudges, someone who's, you know, is going out of their way to forgive people even when they don't deserve that forgiveness, right? That's what Christ taught us, and that's what we can teach our kids through our actions, not, you know, our attitude about people that do wrong to us, is being willing to forgive them and move on.
Yeah, because if they hear you, even if they aren't part of the conversation, they hear you not necessarily plotting revenge, but just saying, I'll never talk to them again, you know, kind of thing. They did me wrong, and I'll forgive, but I won't forget, that kind of attitude. They pick up on that real fast.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's also, I think, especially if, you know, they see, you know, parents or other adults in their life who can't even forgive their own families, right? People in their own families. I think that's the thing, too, is that Christ is calling us to this even bigger thing, right? Love your enemies, right? Forgive the people that do you wrong that you don't even know, right? And sometimes in our family situations, we just can't bring ourselves to reconcile with the people in our own families, our own brothers and sisters, literally. And so I think that's a bad, you know, it's something that we need to work on, because, you know, you're going to pass that same behavior on to your kids, and you don't want to do that, right? You want them to be good Christians, and you do that by practicing that Christianity yourself. And part of that is forgiving, and part of that is showing mercy to people that don't deserve mercy, right? It's not, you don't get mercy and forgiveness because you deserve it. You get it because the person loves you enough to give it to you. And I think that's really an important thing for people to learn. It's not, forgiveness is not earned, you know, when it comes right down to it, or it's given, it's freely given.
Yeah, that is key. And it's something for all of us to always keep in mind, because people will say, well, I will forgive them when they come crawling on their hands and knees and tell me they're sorry, but they haven't even told me they're sorry. And that's not true forgiveness. That doesn't lead to true forgiveness. It has to come from the heart. And like you say, it's never deserved. I mean, it's great if somebody apologizes. It's great if somebody sees the error of their way. And frequently forgiving them unconditionally can lead to that, but it's not a precondition.
Yeah, for sure.
And boy, that's a tough lesson to learn, though, Kevin. That's a tough lesson.
Yeah. Well, and I think that sometimes we think we can just give kids a copy of the catechism or some kind of book, like read this book. It's kind of like teaching kids about sex from a book, right? Uh-huh. Like they certainly could learn about sex from a book that you gave them or from the catechism directly. But I think the teachings that really stick are, as I said, that they're modeled for kids, right? I met a high school student who was really, really active in social justice and working for change and serving the poor and doing all this stuff. And she came to give a talk at this youth conference I was at. And the story she told was that, you know, when she was a young person, they lived in the Oakland Hills, like really nice area.
Mm-hmm.
And every summer, her mom sent her down the hill. I don't think it was down the hill. I think her relatives lived in Chicago. Sent her to Chicago to live in the projects with her aunt.
Oh, wow.
So here she is in the projects every summer living with her aunt. Because her mom wanted her to understand what she had, you know, understand the privileges that she had, understand, you know, appreciate what mm-hmm. she had. And then also her mom was really involved in social justice work in Oakland and would take her with her. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. Never made her do anything, just said, you're coming with me, all while she was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was out, you know, protesting different things and, you know, took her to meetings with senators to lobby on certain Catholic issues,
right.
And you know, took her down to the soup kitchen, you know, to help there however she could. And she said, you know, my mom just took me with her. You know what I mean? And that was it. Like those two experiences, one giving her the experience of, you know, what life was like for people that didn't have what they had. And the second thing was, you know, being dragged to all this social justice work. I think it's probably, like my kids always being, my wife and I have always worked full-time for the church, so our kids have been dragged to church event after church event our whole lives, right? Hopefully that doesn't turn them completely off, but I think, you know, that modeling of church is important. Your parish is important. You know, working for justice is important. You know what I mean? And it's, you show it by how you live your life, not how you lecture them.
Absolutely. Well, you and I run into each other at a lot of functions, some of them official church functions, and some of them sort of, you know, like a Bishop Gago's maternity home dinner or something like that, certainly have a church element to them and have the support of the church. But and we both go out of our way to bring some of our family with us, including the kids, and not say, well, it's an adult event, you know. And they really do learn from those events. And they really do. They also see that this is really important to mom or dad. And
yeah,
I think that's hugely important.
Well, and that's why I think, that, you know, that's the authentic way that faith is passed on, person to person. So, you know, we need witnesses at church who are catechists and witnesses of the priests who are up in front preaching, but we also need parents in each family to be those same witnesses for their kids. And so that's why I think this, you know, this idea of transitioning formation from the children alone to their parents and finding more and different ways to reach the parents and to help them to live out their faith in an authentic way is really important. And I think we just, we've gotten stuck in kind of the rut of, well, we're preparing this child for the sacraments. Well,
right.
We're really like looking at, you know, if we want this person to live a life of faith and be able to live as a disciple, you know, we have to convert the whole family. You know, we have to get the family living the faith, because of, you know, an 8-year-old kid can't really tell their family what to do, or make their family go to church or whatever, or serve the poor. The family has to choose to do that and live that in a meaningful way. So I think that's our call. Our call is to get our families, on board with that. And but it's a different kind of formation. Sometimes we're not used to. I mean, I can hand out the textbooks and the crayons and the construction paper, whatever we're doing, and we can do this class for second graders at the parish. But I think more and more we're called to especially in this COVID time, like how can we educate the parents and send some of these activities home and ask them to do it, you know, on their own.
We're with Deacon Kevin Staskow. Deacon, have there been some surprise fruits of the COVID, or not of COVID but itself, but of the what it has forced us to do, you know, do so much stuff virtual, online, et cetera. Have there been some fruit from that that we didn't expect?
I think so. I mean, I think we found that we have, you know, it's, on every virtual gathering that I do, we get messages saying, thanks for doing this virtually. I've always mm-hmm. wanted to come to this, but mm-hmm. I haven't been able to, you know, to come right. down. We just had the Respect Life gathering virtually this last weekend, and we had people say, you know, hey, you know, I wouldn't have been able to attend, and I've wanted to attend this for the last 3 or 4 years, but I'm not able to travel down to Sacramento for this. So it was great to have it virtually. Could we do this again? And I think what we'll see is that a lot of these meetings and gatherings that we have will start to offer them both live and virtual. I mean, I know that we're already trying that because you can have a lot bigger impact and a bigger mm-hmm. audience. And then you also have the opportunity to record it, and then people can watch it afterwards. So when we're offering something virtually and then streaming it to Facebook or YouTube, we're getting a lot more views later on than we ever did live. And so there's a lot bigger reach. So we're kind of excited about that that possibility to just kind of have it as part of what we do mm-hmm. to offer things virtually to have a wider reach. And I know that some people just live on their phones, right? They never, they don't go anywhere. They just live on their phone. So, you know, having those speakers or those workshops or those meetings on their phone, or even recordings of their meetings later that they can access anytime they want, is a good thing. Yeah, I think we've had these virtual platforms for a while, but we haven't used them because we haven't had to. So now everyone's learning how to use them. And, you know, again, I'm amazed at how many meetings I get in a day now. People are like, can I meet? And I say, oh, how about right now? Let's go on this call. You know what I mean? Let's do it. Let's get everybody on a Zoom call. Get everybody on Microsoft Teams. Let's get everybody on FaceTime. Let's just talk now. You know, I think it's great. I think there's a lot of fruit, and I think we'll continue to see the fruit. I think we've talked a lot about our young people, especially the iGens and the millennials, being very comfortable on their phones or in a virtual world. I think the leaders in the church and the people that are doing workshops, certainly my staff, have gotten a lot more comfortable in the virtual world. They may not like it, but at least they know how to use the tools. And, we're using them more often. And we're spending a lot more time on what we post on Instagram, what we post on Facebook, because mm-hmm. we know people aren't, you know, coming to church, but they are still interacting with social media and our websites. And, again, we've talked for years, well, we really need to get better at this. Well, now we've gotten better at it, and I think parishes are doing the same thing. I just look at St. Clair. I've looked how the mass broadcast has gotten better and better. They've added subtitles and all this stuff. I mean, it's amazing. It's, you know, from the first week till today, mm-hmm. how much better. You know, I think they've gotten better cameras. They've, you know, they've invested in that because it's, you know, it is really reaching people.
You know, I had a birthday the other day, and my kids and my wife hauled me up into my computer, and they pushed a few buttons, and they said, okay, Dad, just hit that link right there. And here's my sister from Tucson, my sister from Vacaville, my nephew in Minneapolis, my mother-in-law in Montana, you know, about 10, 12 different people. As best birthday present I ever got.
Yeah, yeah.
And fortunately had a teenage son who now knew how to connect everybody. Absolutely right. You give me chills when you say it, but I think you're absolutely right. And I think back to the first people who were told to, you know, spread the gospel all over the world, and they must have looked at Jesus and said, "Well, how are we going to do that?" You know, although Paul did some pretty heroic stuff, you know, but my goodness, now we can do it with the press of a button.
Well, and I think, you know, but I think I got the same reaction from some of the, you know, some of the catechetical leaders and youth ministry leaders in our diocese when we said, okay, you're just going to have to do, you know, faith formation and you can't gather, right? Or, you know, or some of the priests are going to have to do mass and you have to do it virtually, you know, figure that out, right? I mean, you get that same shocked look, like, yeah. What, really? I have to do that? Like, I don't, you know, again, and some people don't want to do that at all. They just want to. You know, whatever, crawl under a rock and wait till it passes.
Yeah.
But I think we're really called to do something now, and you know, even though it may be limited and we may not like it, you know, we have to move forward and continue to be disciples, continue to reach out, continue to spread the faith, and that's really what we're trying to do.
Amen. You know, and as he teaching us some patience, I think back in March when everything started to close down, we thought, we're in this for a month, maybe 6 weeks, who knows, not going to be a whole lot longer than that. Let's just all pay attention, follow the rules, and here we are 6 months later, and we're still in the midst of it, but faring pretty well in most areas. I mean, I know there's a lot of pain out there, and a lot of people have lost loved ones or have what they call long haulers, where they sort of recovered but have lingering illness, and then a lot of people unemployed. There's a lot of pain out there. There's no question, but people are soldiering on, and I think you're right. I think we're being prepared for something. Deacon Kevin Saskow, always a pleasure. Ministry Days, September 26th, ministrydays.com to sign up and read all about it.
Yes, please join us. Thank you for having me, Bob.
Hey, thank you, Deacon, and God bless you and your family and your ministry, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, great. Talk to you next week. Thanks for talking.
Thanks so much. That's Deacon Kevin Staskow, and one of those, I shake my head every day, and I say, boy, we're lucky to have that person, Deacon Kevin Staskow, a relatively new deacon here in the Diocese of Sacramento, and says that becoming a deacon has really, really changed his life, so we're lucky to have him as well. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Atlet Herald Magazine, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Julie, for that. And everybody should know that the great September-October issue of the Catholic Herald, a very strong pro-life issue, some wonderful, wonderful and inspiring pieces in that magazine. So look for it. And you can always contact the Catholic Herald if you're not getting it, or you can go to the diocesan website, scd.org, and find a link to the Catholic Herald. There is some great, great reading that will inspire you. Well, we're pleased and honored to welcome in Father Bon Rojas, currently on the faculty at St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park. Father, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. It's great to hear your voice again.
Yes, I should say, Father was one time my pastor. And you graduated from that.
I have.
You straightened me out, and they moved you, and then they moved you along.
it was great. I still reminisce about St. James, and I still am in contact with a lot of parishioners from St. James.
Well, we all miss you at St. James. I mean, we have wonderful clergy there now, and Father Ray, of course, our pastor, and everybody loves him too. But we really miss you at St. James. And,
well, you know, it was great because Father Sia was my student here.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, so having a student who became who went there is great, and at the same time, someone I baptized at St. James is now a deacon. He's my student. And now a deacon, and will be ordained hopefully as a priest in a few months.
Oh, very good.
Next school year, I mean next summer. So I can actually say someone I baptized is now becoming a priest.
That's just got to be inspiring.
Inspiring, and at the same time, it can actually say, "Hey, it shows my age."
Yes. Yeah. So. As I understand it, they got you down to St. Patrick's because they had a good basketball hoop down there.
Well, that and actually volleyball, too.
And volleyball.
We're actually going into volleyball games here, and so it's more a lot of team sport that we're trying to foster. So
that's a great sport. That's a hard sport.
It's a good sport. I played last Saturday, and sure enough, I was almost late for Mass on Sunday because I could not get out of bed.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of leaping and lunging.
Oh, yes.
my youngest son was on the high school volleyball team in Davis, and loved it, you know.
It's hard on your joints, but, man, it's great.
Yeah, it's a very, very great sport. Now sand volleyball, of course, is a big deal. I just can't even imagine playing volleyball in the sand. You can't move.
Oh, yes. It is hard, but it's very satisfying.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So how long have you been at St. Patrick's?
I have been teaching here since 2007, mm-hmm. But I started teaching full-time 5 years ago.
Okay.
So I'm under contract here. So, we have the vow of obedience. So mm-hmm. wherever we are needed and the bishop assigns me, that's where I go.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, yeah. Explain for a lot of people who don't quite understand the process. We know there's Mount Angel up in Oregon, and
right.
We're praying for those people right now because they are right in the middle of the fires up there.
Yes.
And of course, St. Patrick.
They were on level 2 of evacuation, meaning they just have to be ready.
Be ready.
Apparently, level 3 is when they need to evacuate. But that's where they were. Thankfully, it didn't continue, but they were ready. They were ready. Classes there were canceled, but hopefully, you know, they'll get back this week.
So explain how that works, how it's decided who goes to where and for how long, et cetera.
Normally, we send our Diocese of Sacramento, excuse me, if they come in for philosophy, our go-to seminary for philosophy studies is Mount Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Angel also has a theology school, so we've been sending our theology students to both Mount Angel and St. Patrick's.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we send them to a number of seminaries, for theology. One is including both is Mount Angel and St. Patrick's, but we used to send some to Texas as Assumption there. We also used North American College in Rome, and then we also used in Mexico, although in Mexico only really for philosophy, as well in high school, but we used those seminaries before. We also used St. Charles Borromeo before in Philly, in Philadelphia. But those are the ones that I could remember. Oh, also Josephinum in Ohio. So we used to, with Bishop Wiegand before, we would go from everywhere. So in my class, for example, there were three of us, and we all came from different seminaries. But now with Bishop Soto, as far as I remember, as far as I know, he wants everybody to be at least in these two close nearby seminaries, St. Pat's and Mount Angel in Oregon. And I like it because, you know, the priests are able to, or the newly graduates are able to kind of build their fraternity already while they're there, so that when we are going to become a presbyterate, this whole idea of intentional presbyterate or intentional community is a little bit easier done.
So do you enjoy the teaching?
I do. I will always be a teacher, whether I'm in a university or in a parish. You know that. You've seen that firsthand. That will never go away. So anywhere I go, I think priests, we are supposed to be teachers. I think we really need to be able to transmit the faith as effectively as we can, and to model. So modeling with our prayer, with the liturgy, with the way we live, that's the most effective way of teaching. So, I will always be a teacher.
So what do you teach at St. Patrick's?
Well, I taught so many different areas, you know, back in I taught in philosophy, I taught metaphysics, epistemology, history, and then in systematics with Christology. But lately, I've been doing homiletics, so I'm preaching. And then the last couple of years, I was a director of field education, so this is like internship guys going into nursing homes and jail ministry, tribunal, and all those kinds of soup kitchen, all those kinds of assignments. And then now, this year, I just started to be the director of pastoral year, which is, I don't know if you remember this, back in 97, I did my pastoral year as a very young student, St. James also.
Right,
David.
Right.
I'm now the director of those students who are doing that. So I got to travel a little bit.
So how many students would you have at St. Patrick's at one time? Not just you, but the whole seminary.
Oh, right. You mean this year? School year?
Yeah.
This school year, it's a little bit low. It's 51. But I always tell everybody the silver lining that when I came in 95, there were only 41 students.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it went up to about 130 at some point, and then it went down again. There's so many different factors, but we need to keep praying for vocations. We need
Absolutely.
To keep praying for vocations.
So how many different dioceses would be represented there right now?
Very good question. I think right now we have 11 dioceses, if I am not mistaken. I believe we were able, at some point, we were able to receive as many as 21 dioceses.
Wow.
Yeah. We even had seminarians from Boston, because at some point we were able to accommodate the deaf and mute seminarians, priests who are now ministering to the deaf and mute, because they were themselves were deaf and mute. And it was wonderful. And so we would have sign language during the class. It was great. It was great ministry. And right now those priests are flourishing, and and really needed.
Oh, I can imagine.
And then we still have the Diocese of Agana. You know where that is?
Of where?
Archdiocese of Agana.
Yes.
Or Agana. That's in Guam, my friend.
Yes, yes.
Yes, that's Guam. So we still have Guam. We used to have students from Saipan, the Diocese of Chalan-Kanoa.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have Micronesian dioceses there, but we don't have them this mm-hmm. year, at least for the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my friends is a bishop of Saipan. He was a few years behind me in the seminary. And, they don't have new vocations right now. So we need to pray for more vocations.
Absolutely. Is there, in the United States, we've heard for years about a priest shortage. Is there a priest shortage?
Well, number-wise, we could use some more.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of ratio, compared to other countries, my point of reference, for example, is the Philippines. There's always less priests in the Philippines compared to the United States because mm-hmm. there are more Catholics there.
Right.
We have to keep that in perspective. But we could certainly use more. Now, is there a decline in number, in the trend? There has been. And that decline really started back in the 80s. So, and we're just feeling it now because the last of the bulk of that is now retiring.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just becoming more... it's becoming felt now, but in the fact is that the decline has been going on. So,
we're with Father Bon Rojas. Father is a professor. Is that the correct term?
I'm in the faculty. Yes.
At St. Patrick's Seminary in beautiful Menlo Park. What a beautiful part of the world that is.
It is, although right now it's as hazy as I would guess where you are.
Yes. Yeah, somebody sent me a photo of what looked like, he was in Redwood City, and looked like the Bay Area at night, and he said this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Exactly.
And all the streetlights were on.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So.
Although right now, thank God, the sun is out, so we are happy.
Oh, that's very good. So how is the pandemic, how does it remind all of us of all the liturgical principles? It's sort of taking us back to basics.
Well, curious that you said that. I'm actually giving a presentation on this in our upcoming ministry days. I don't know if you've planned that already. But during the ministry days, I'm giving two presentations. One of them is, I titled it, Feeding the Flock in the Time of Pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look into some of the good practices and not so good practices that we've had. We're all learning about this, so I want to look into this with a very open mind. And then at the same time, what are some of the theological principles that we want to keep in mind in looking at all of these practices that we have? For me, I have a very kind of a personal experience with this pandemic, with this whole adaptation of how we celebrate our faith. Because back in March, I became ill. I didn't know if it was the virus or not, but I just wanted to make sure everybody in the community, because I'm living in a seminary where there's a number of other people living with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went in isolation, and I just felt physically unable to celebrate Mass myself. So I went online to attend a recorded Mass from a nearby parish. It was on YouTube. It actually felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was very weird because I knew this was recording, and I was responding to a bunch of ones and zeros.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, I don't know if you remember, on March 27, Pope Francis held a special Urbi et Orbi, right?
Yes.
So I stayed up. I went online at exactly the same time that it was supposed to go, and I had this absolute spiritual experience that I was here in front of my laptop and I am bawling.
Oh wow!
I mean, I kid you not. And I thought, oh, a grown man just crying in front of, and I thought, yeah, my dad should see me now.
Yes.
and so it really gave me this perspective that the social media and other virtual means have proven to be indispensable. Although this pandemic also showed some lacuna in our ability to navigate this media.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to examine some of these practices available and look at the principles, the theological, anthropological principles that are embedded in these principles. And I really hope that this experience will not remain a footnote in the life of the church in our history, but will really help us improve our ministry to the Lord's flock. Because I keep thinking, you know, I have this experience. I mean, I'm an able-bodied man. And yet I had this experience. I had to be confined. How much more will this be felt by the elderly who still have, you know, intellectual faculties, who can navigate through, and they are the most active on Facebook, and yet they do not have the mobility. They're immunocompromised, at least at this point, which will endanger them from growing. Those people who have, for example, agoraphobia, and I've met so many parishioners who have agoraphobia and just could not concentrate in being in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, we just kind of said, oh, well, cut our losses before. Like, I wish I could, like, we could minister. And we remain on the talking. I wish we could minister to them, but there were not many resources that we've done. At St. James and also St. Anthony, my last assignment there as a pastor, we trained a lot of lay Eucharistic ministers to bring the body of Christ to the homebound. And I think Shelley, your wife, I think she was one of those who were trained, if I'm not mistaken. And so I remember at St. Anthony, we trained the first year that I was there, we trained like 87 extraordinary ministers to the sick. But I thought, you know, they would bring the Magnificat or the Missalette. Some of them will talk about what I preached. I started doing this messaging, and I would call them, but it's really not enough. And I thought, hey, this practice right now, we could easily apply these to those who are homebound, to those who are in the nursing home.
Absolutely.
They could celebrate the Mass at the same time. I'm not talking about recorded Mass. I'm talking about, doing this Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Right, live,
audio,
yeah.
Video conference Mass.
Yes.
That they are able to celebrate. Right now I celebrate Mass every Saturday at 7 p.m. And it's really geared towards those who are in Asia, because in Philippines, New Zealand, Malaysia, especially Philippines and New Zealand, they're now again on lockdown.
Right.
And so many of them cannot go. And so it's 10 a.m. on Sunday there, so I do that Mass. I celebrate that. And it's always, I never do the live streaming for Facebook. It's always on Zoom. It's always on Zoom.
Wow.
So that I can see them. And they know I can see them.
That's fabulous.
If they are not paying attention, I say, hey, how are you?
That's great.
I mean, this past weekend, I talked about forgiveness. And I said, put an object in front of you to symbolize that person or that hurt that you had. And I called out to one of them. I said, "Hey, I don't see an object there."
Yeah, that's, that forgiveness, that's the toughest thing Jesus asked us to do, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I told them, I said, you know, at some point, I asked them to, at the beginning of the homily, I said, you know, have a very tight grip on this. You know, the stronger your grudges or your anger is, the deeper your hurt is, the tighter your grip should be.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
And I was looking at one of them, and she's not closing her fist. I'm like, hey, I don't know if you hear me. Can you hear me?
I'm gonna have to get in on that Zoom.
Let me know. I'll send you the link.
I will.
But what I do is there is a sense of belonging that is happening that does not happen when we take the social media at face value,
right,
and do not explore what else and how else we can use it in order to adapt to our needs. Instead, what we do is we just take the social media and at least what we know of it and say, oh, this is what the media can do, and we let our liturgy adapt. And so the goal that I have for this talk for Ministry Day is really to explore, let's start with, what are our theological principles? What are the principles that need to be met? And so I'm going to look at the three major principles. One is the ecclesiological principle. What does it mean to be church? You know, does it mean to just simply do our obligation of listening to Mass? Or does church being church means being part of a community? Because a lot of times we think of, you know, the church as the brick and mortar, but Lumen Gentium, the document of the Constitution of the Church, says it's, I think it's Article Number 3 or Number 4. I might be wrong on this. I think it's Number 4. But it says that the church teaching is really geared to this understanding that the church is not made of bricks and mortar, but of people.
Right, right.
And so how do we constitute or reconstitute with this situation that church? How do we build that church?
Indeed.
And that's really the biggest question that we have to face. How do we foster a sense of community? If there is no way for household one to interact with household two because it's live streamed and everything goes through the pastor,
right,
we're not building church there.
Indeed.
The church is built on the pastor.
Father, we are flat out of time. We need to get you back on.
Oh, okay.
Is can we call you again?
Definitely.
I learned so much. I feel like I'm in seminary.
So, but I really wanted to invite everybody to come to Ministry Days. If you're not attending,
yes,
mine, there's so many wonderful talks during that day. So please go to scd.org. I know you will plug this at some point, but
yes,
go to Ministry Days. And I don't know if the list of talks are there already, but please, I would really invite everybody to register.
Thank you so much, Father. God bless your work, and so good to talk to you, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Yes, let's do it again.
Hey, thanks, Father.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care. That's Father Bong Rojas. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here, oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things